the J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, let me firstly say it's great to have you back fit and firing after a week away. But I have to follow that with an apology. Some concerned listeners sent some chocolates for you to J-Talk Towers, but unfortunately my kids found them and have eaten them all.
Oh, I won't begrudge them that. Thank you for the kind message and the chocolates, whatever they are. Thank you for having me back and keeping faith in me. I hope to repay that faith with a double shift this week.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, Sean Carroll came with some pretty whopping stats last week. So are you feeling the pressure just a little bit yourself?
I am, absolutely. I've got one. I've had to search one out just to compete with him.
Rightio. Well, stay tuned for that, listeners. And before we welcome in our two guests to chat about the biggest game on the Match Day 14 slate, we need to get caught up on the results of your latest poll, Sam. So the clubhouse leader for J1 goal of the season is?
It is now Thomas Deng. He got 53.2% of the votes, quite comfortable victor. Idiguchi was second and previous leader Furuhashi relegated to third. There was a little bit of support for him right at the end of the poll, but yeah, Deng held on and I think a very worthy winner.
Yes, indeed. The people have spoken, and on this occasion, yeah, I have to agree with them. And yes, Thomas Deng's strike will certainly take some topping, although, yeah, Deng, unfortunately for himself, was on the score sheet at the wrong end of the pitch in Match Day 14, and we'll come on to that a bit later. But, yes, the Kanagawa Derby dominated the build-up to Saturday's Match Day 14, and Yokohama F. Marinos and Kawasaki certainly didn't disappoint with the product they put out on the pitch. So let's welcome our regular correspondents from those two clubs. In the red, white, and blue corner, representing F. Marinos, it is, of course, Stuart Woodward. Stuart, welcome back to the pod. How are you?
Oh, very well. A little damp, but doing well.
I reckon, yeah, you might have just about dried out by now, Stuart, after that biblical downpour in the second half that, yeah, we'll come on to shortly. And, sorry, Neil, what's the official colour for the shade of blue that Kawasaki wear?
I think they call it Sachs blue. But I think that's after Saxony rather than saxophone, because saxophones aren't normally blue. But I think, yeah, sax blue, I believe. Right. But maybe that's a Japanism. I don't know.
All right. Well, yes, in the sax blue and black corner then, you've already heard from you. It's Neil Debnam. Neil, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me again. And nice to speak to you guys.
Yeah, terrific to have you back on. As Sam mentioned in the green room, Neil, that, yeah, we probably should have had you on after Kawasaki's one and only defeat of the season so far against Nagoya, as it doesn't appear there's going to be too many occasions to catch you perhaps in a bit of a low mood as Kawasaki just continue to roll. Another fantastic week. We'll talk about the Levain Cup with Sam later on. But, yeah, you followed that quarterfinal win over Kobe up with an ultimately a fairly comprehensive 3-1 away win over Yokohama. So you must, just still be buzzing off of that.
Yeah, it's definitely a good time to be a Frontale fan at the moment. But, you know me, I'm not counting my chickens. We've still got to play the best defence in the league, Sagan Tosu, away later in the year. So anything can happen. And they were backfiring, weren't they, this weekend? So, yeah, I've just taken it one step at a time. I mean, I think the wheels could fall off at any moment, but whilst those wheels are still on, I'm going to enjoy it, I think so.
Fair enough. Can't begrudge you that. All right, so, Stuart, yeah, you rocked up to the Nissan Stadium on Saturday night. You obviously didn't think you were going to get as wet as you ended up getting. But, obviously your guys made, to put it mildly, the perfect start when Marcos Jr. swept you into a second-minute lead. So, I don't know, had you had time to take your seat by the time Marcos opened the scoring?
Yes, I'd got my seat in hand, and it was very, very surprising. I thought it was kind of a good fortune, and luck was going to go our way. But in choosing my seat, I didn't choose very wisely. And I think there's something about the choice selection on the J-League application where I buy the ticket that flips me round, because when I want to get a seat at the back, I get one at the front. When I want to get one at the front, I get one at the back. So this time I mistakenly got a seat that was seven rows from the front, which wasn't under the covers.
Goodness gracious me. So, yeah, you literally are just about drawing out now as we record on Monday night, Stuart.
Indeed.
All right, then. So, Sam, the opener for F. Marino, scored by Marcos Jr., was set up by Eitaro Matsuda, who a lot of our listeners might not be all that familiar with yet. But he was handed a starting spot here by Ange Postecoglou. And, yeah, Sam, what have you made of him in his appearances so far? I think F. Marino's fans have got pretty big raps on him.
Yeah, generally very impressive. I think maybe later on I might come in and criticise him. I think he was partially at fault for one of the later goals. But for a young player who had only just signed for Marinos at the start of this season, then went out on loan to Sagamihara, and just really impressed. But I believe the story is they played against the Marinos B team or reserves or whatnot in a friendly, and he was just so impressive that they thought, okay, he's got to come back into the first team. And he's had a lot of football since he's come back, and yeah, really impressive going forward. This ball was just, they've kind of got this link-up play. Marcos Junior is so good at just dropping behind the striker and getting that space, and Junior Santos created that space with a nice run. So it was really well worked, actually, from Yokohama. And just wondering, what do you know about Matsuda? Have you heard much about him before he returned to Marinos?
No, it was kind of interesting because I attended the team presentation, I think it's in January, where they show the new players and the new uniforms. And strangely, this year, both of the guys who came up from the youth team, including Matsuda, were sent out immediately to other clubs. Now, I wondered why that was. You know, maybe this was going to be a busy year with the ACL, and so, you know, better to, you know, put them out in other clubs where they'll, you know, get more play, you know, in if the team was going to be, you know, concentrated on the competition and the league again, that they didn't really want to, you know, have the youngsters kind of in the squad this time. So, you know, it was just I felt a little bit, oh, that's a bit sad, you know, just getting, you know, loaned out immediately, because normally they would stay with the team for the first year and then they would get loaned out in the second year, and then maybe come back in the third year. That's been a pattern that's been quite common. And so didn't hear anything about him, or even kind of forgot that he existed, and then suddenly he was back, and that was on his first appearance, coming on at the match closest to Matsuda Naoki's kind of anniversary. And so it was like a banner was up there, you know, welcome back, you know, Matsuda to the pitch, you know, so, you know, kind of playing off those two things. And I've been, you know, very, very impressed with him. And, you know, I saw Keita Endo from the very first matches in exactly the same way, where he was kind of brought on at 19. And I think that Matsuda is probably more impressive than him at 19. So I've kind of got a good kind of impression and hope for the future with him.
All right. So, yeah, Matsuda thrown in from the start by Ange Postecoglou in this huge match, and that paid dividends in just the second minute, as we mentioned. What about on the Frontale side of things, Neil, and the team that Mr. Oniki put out? Interesting that he went with Morita and Oshima in the central midfield. That might be the first time all season in the league, I think, those two have started together. It's tended to be Oshima and Tanaka, and Morita and Shimoda together. So, I don't know, did you get the sense that he wheeled out the big guns, and this is his first choice midfield in the big games, his favourite pairing in there, do you think?
I think at the start of the season, there was pretty clear sort of A midfield and B midfield, if that makes sense. And like you said, the A was Oshima, Tanaka and Wakizaka, and the B for some reason also featured Wakizaka, but with Shimoda and Morita. And I think until maybe a couple of weeks ago, Oniki was really going with one or the other. And I think it's only recently that he's sort of combined the two. And I think Morita's had a couple of really good games, and I think he deserved to stay in there. And at the same time, maybe Tanaka's had a couple of dodgy games when we had our, like, mini blip. So I think, in a way, Morita's he deserves to be there. I'm not sure Tanaka deserves not to be playing, but obviously there's only limited space in the midfield. But I welcome it because I think although we're rotating a lot more this year than we ever have under Oniki, there's still a bit of a feeling that the rotation is quite sort of fixed and that it's not really quite as fluid as many other teams, I guess, are doing, or you would expect, that it's kind of like choose piece A or choose piece B. So I'm quite pleased that he's trying out some new combinations, and I guess it worked. So we've got to be pleased about that, really. I think the only other surprise, probably, I mean, the front three, I never really know what's happening there because it could just be choose one of any, three of any. And they all seem to sort of be able to do the business to a certain extent, especially in the second half, because we never really seem to start particularly strong, apart from against your guys. Sorry, Ben. I guess Kurumaya played instead of Noborizato, and I think we probably needed that because Noborizato was looking pretty tired recently. And I don't know, I would have liked to see a bit more of the other right back we've got, Diogo Matias, because I think every time he's played, he's been great. And Yamane seems to come in and out of games, but you can't really complain because he's doing great for someone in his first season. So, yeah, we're kind of spoilt at the moment, to be honest, that we've got options all over the pitch apart from in central defence. So, but everywhere else, we can afford to move people around a bit, and it's a nice problem or a nice thing to have, so...
Yeah, just to latch on to Neil's point, so I'm going to go early with my stat because it's just come up quite nicely. But just for the squad depth that Kawasaki have, I mean, they're the only team that have had four players score five or more goals this season. The next best is two players. And then of those four players, which are Ianaga, Damian, Kobayashi and Mitoma, they've only been on the pitch together for 24 minutes this season, which just shows how well they've been coming off the bench, the clinicalness of all the players to do a job when they come off the bench, and just to show how strong the rest of the team is around them, because even if two of those players aren't playing, they don't drop their level, and they've just been fantastic all season, and they're the only team really that has managed to do this squad rotation this season and really maintain those levels, and I think just shows what a squad that they've developed so far this season.
There you go, touche. And back over to you, Sean Carroll. The pressure's back on. That's some sterling work there, Sam. Terrific stuff. All right, so Neil, yeah, you obviously fell behind in the second minute. And I don't know how your nerves were pre-game, but the falling behind in the second minute can't have done your nerves too much good. So, how pleased were you? Were you with the reaction to from your side after going behind so early?
Yeah, pretty pleased. But I think, I mean, I know the sort of the score sheet says so, but I don't think we particularly got really going till the second half. But yeah, you're right. It's kind of slightly bizarre that the first I do actually try and make some notes for the blog posts when I'm watching the game. And the first one I wrote was, oh, we've had quite a good start. And I don't know quite how I decided we had a good start, seeing as we sort of conceded after 2 minutes. So it's obviously a conclusion that I jumped to quite quickly and, wholeheartedly. But yeah, after 2 minutes, that was that good start was gone. And that goal really knocked the stuffing out of us a bit, I think. But I don't know. I mean, to sort of roll forward in the game a little bit. So hopefully I won't be destroying your plan.
No,
here.
No, go but, for it.
I just kind of felt there was a real difference between us in the first half and the second half. That I think, to refer back to the Kobe game last week, we didn't give our old friend Ikura a chance at all. Their defense, we just didn't stop hassling them the whole game. And it was beautiful to watch. And then in the first half of this game, we weren't really sort of pressuring the defence or the keeper that much. And I was quite surprised because it seemed to work really well, but maybe it's an energy thing or something like that. And then as soon as the subs were made at half time, that sort of totally switched around and we were back where we were against Kobe and not giving anyone a sort of a moment's rest at all. And yeah, that was sort of seemed a strange tactic, but I wondered if it was a tactic or it was just kind of like a very good half-time team talk or something. I don't know, but it really felt like the first half we were sort of conserving energy a little bit, maybe. And maybe that's another tactic that I haven't noticed, that we do seem to do better in the second half. So maybe that is intentional, or I don't know about intentional, but maybe that is considered and it's a plan, perhaps. I'm not sure.
All right. So, Stuart, how well did you think your team played overall? And obviously, after going ahead so early, how happy were you with, I guess, most of the first half hour? Because shortly after that, Frontale equalised. But did you feel that F. Marinos were fairly comfortable in the game until, obviously, Kawasaki flipped things around in fairly short order either side of half time?
Well, it's funny. I would definitely agree about Kawasaki playing well in the first few minutes, because I've got my notes here and detailing how the first goal was scored, and I've got chaos down there because like Marinos are very rattled at that time, so they weren't able to get the possession and keep the possession in the way that they normally do. So that goal, if you look at it, it's very scrappy the way all of the passes are put together, and then they were in the right place. Matsuda, had a beautiful pass to Marcos to score, but overall that wasn't the flowing kind of play that we were used to. And like looking at it from a Marinos point of view, Kawasaki played against us the way that we play against other teams, and really pressuring for the ball and catching every loose ball. So I was a bit, I felt it was, great to be one up, but it was definitely, not in any security there with just the first one. And I also from around about the 25th minute to the 29th minute, there were so many kind of little off the ball incidents and players that I felt who were got aggrieved, and definitely several times up until that point, the whole tactic from my point of view, looking at Kawasaki's play, that was to get the ball to Mitoma, and he was totally unmarked on that left hand side and very dangerous. So it looked several times that definitely he was in with a chance there. And then going into the second half, by the 49th minute, the game was won basically at that point, because two goals down, and obviously it's quite difficult to catch up. We might have done a Kobe and caught up the last two goals in the last 2 minutes, but I think maybe rain probably prevented that, and also the kind of lack of confidence after that. But as we were saying, the rain really started at the 53rd minute, and I was getting warnings on my watch. It was telling me at the start of the match, oh, there's 21 millimeters an hour coming soon, and I put away all my stuff. Then at around about half time, it said 70 millimeters an hour is coming. So I made sure all my bag was all sealed up, and I didn't have a poncho. And when the rain came down, it was like stepping into a cold shower. I gasped because it was so cold and so completely wetting within like 30 seconds. I was totally soaked. And then my watch buzzed again and said 80 millimeters an hour is coming. And I looked a bit later, and I saw at one point it probably was 128. millimetres an hour. And when I was looking back tonight on the DAZN coverage to look at the match, because really I couldn't concentrate after that. It was so hard, and my glasses were steaming up, and I couldn't hear clapping because the rain was drumming on my cap, and it was just such a change. But looking at the TV coverage, I felt that Marinos picked up after the second goal. They had like a gargantuan task against them, but they started to get a little bit more into the play, and also their, you know, like passing became, I think, more accurate. And I think we in the end, I think we had more possession. But like another one of these matches where you look at it statistically and say, oh, they did very well, and the number of shots was very good. But definitely it was Kawasaki's game the 49th minute after the second goal was in. It was just a very difficult match to catch up in. And funnily enough, at the end of the match, I watched the Japanese interviewer interviewing Postecoglou, and she said to him, well, what was the reason that you put on three substitutes? He said, well, at that time we were losing 3-1 and we wanted to win. And that was his explanation. So it's a very typical dry comment. He doesn't like to make any comments, but it is his way that, like, at a certain time, these three people are going to come on and they will play in the same way as the other three that have come off. So there is no plan B. So if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, it probably we'll go down in flames. And while we are second only to Kawasaki, I think, in total goals scored this year, we are probably in about the bottom five of goals let in. And that includes teams that haven't played many matches. So, yes, definitely. It was one of those matches. But Postecoglou even said we were played off the field in the second half. So, you know, all credit to Kawasaki for winning that game.
Just on that point, really, about the refusal to go to a plan B, what is your thoughts, really, as a supporter and the rest of the supporters there, when, in this game especially, there was a clear area of weakness for Yokohama down the right-hand side with Koike. He had a tough game, and then no one really helped him out. He was constantly put one-on-one with Mitoma, who had the beating of him, and often Koike was just inside and gave Mitoma so much space. But there was no part of this game where Yokohama looked to address that. They didn't move anyone across. They didn't ask Matsuda to drop deeper at all. And it was always going to be a problem, and just it wasn't addressed. Are you happy just to continue going the way that Postecoglou wants to, just in the belief that that way is the right way to go and you'll get results in the end? Or would you like to see him a little bit more pragmatic, especially in a game against a team as good as Kawasaki?
Yeah, good question, because like I could see from where I was sitting that definitely was the hole, and you could it was over and over again. So I would have thought that, like, the on pitch, like, the captain, you know, would have directed the match at that point. So a stronger captain or just the team would have realized themselves that they have to adjust. So I'm not sure whether the team are playing rigidly to whatever he's told them to do, or he's just not communicating to them to fix that, and they are playing to some mysterious plan that doesn't involve that side of the pitch. So it's very very difficult to assess. But these things kind of get, I feel that they get fixed in the midweek, and so the next match that maybe whatever was going wrong there will be fixed. But I don't see the on-demand fixing that was probably necessary in that match. And there's been other matches where, like, similar things that, you know, players don't seem to be on the dangerous player, or so I wonder actually, you know, whether it's a little bit of confidence in the plan and less in analysis of who we're playing against, because I think Postecoglou has even said that in the past, and I sometimes don't know whether he just puts up a front to say, okay, we always play the same way and we're playing our football and this is what's going to win us the game. I'm not sure whether that's actually kind of a smokescreen or whether that really is the case, that, OK, we don't look at the other players. We don't need to look at any other teams and see what they do. We'll just play our way and we'll score one more goal than the other team and that will make us win. So, yes, that's a little bit of a mystery. But I think the fans overall are definitely behind the manager, because it's very exciting to watch and lots of goals, and in many cases it works, but when it doesn't work, it spectacularly doesn't work.
Can I ask a quick question regarding Marino's? Is the defence, is this, because I'm really 100% totally frontale blinkered, and to be honest, sometimes I don't even watch the highlights of our games, I just watch the game. I wonder, Is there a big change in the defence since last year? It's the same kind of players, really, isn't it? Really? Or is there a tactical change? Because it seems like still plenty of goals going in, but, it really seemed... I totally agree with you when you're saying that that's where the huge hole was, and I was delighted he did nothing about it. But, I don't know.
If you look at it, in the earlier part of the season, we had the goalkeeper was out and Thiago Martins were out, both injured for a long time. So there was quite a lot of kind of weakness there. But they're both back now. And then the only player who is different from last year is Koike, and it was probably his watch that was lacking there. But it's a little bit reminiscent of the season before, where as a Marinos fan, looking at the way we played two years ago and last year, was hardly different, and the number of goals was a great number of goals, but the reason that we did so well last year is we didn't let in goals that lost us matches. So the defence is a really the weak spot. Also, I feel that players like other teams are letting us play forward, and then their strategy is to get the ball to the key player and have a run and on a breakaway. And what caught us out before was that many times the opposition was caught out by the offside, offside almost on the halfway line. But if the linesman doesn't catch the offside, or it's very too tight to make a difference, then it really is a one-on-one with the goalkeeper at that point. And you might have seen it in other matches, like in the Kobe match. Sometimes it's a one-on-one with the goalkeeper halfway up the field, and you might be under Park's kung fu kick at that point. So it's the weak point, but I think it's also the strategy that we play in the opposition's half and everybody run back as fast as you can when you lose the ball.
All right then. Well, let's wrap up the three goals then that ultimately sealed a victory for Kawasaki. Really interesting chat there, guys, and fascinating to hear from you all about the way that Yokohama go about things. And obviously on this occasion, it wasn't their evening. As we've mentioned a couple of times in passing, after a couple of warnings down to Kawasaki left, the man of the moment, Kaoru Mitoma, finally equalised in the 33rd minute. He was sent racing clear by Yasuto Wakizaka, and then cut back onto his right foot before firing through Thiago Martins' legs and past Park Il-gyu. And then in just the third minute of the second half, again down the frontale left, Ryota Oshima was sent clear, and his inch-perfect square ball was thumped home first time by Akihiro Ienaga. And then just 2 minutes later, so 5 minutes into the second half, it was pretty much game over, although there was obviously still a lot of time left in the game for F. Marinos. But again, Mitoma was the man in the right spot at the right time. He firstly played the ball out to Reo Hatate on the right, continued his run, and has stroked home the easiest of finishes from Hatate's superbly weighted pass. And then, as we've mentioned a few times, Stewart got extremely soaked as the heavens opened shortly after. But, Neil, yeah, we better get your thoughts on Mitoma then. He's obviously, yeah, he's burst onto the scene in his first ever J1 season. But, I mean, it's worth remembering that he's not a particularly young player. I mean, he's 23 years old. He's come into the team after doing his time at Tsukuba University. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of world footballing terms, I mean, he's not young at all, is he? But, I mean, he's a first-year J1 player who has just come in and hit the ground running. And, I mean, can you think of another player in your time supporting Kawasaki Frontale who has made such an instant impact? And, I mean, you can basically rely on him whenever he's in an offensive position to either make the right decision or to put the ball in the back of the net. His impact has just been absolutely stunning, hasn't it?
Yeah, and answer to your question, no, I can't. I don't think anyone's been given made such an impact so early on. And it's kind of, I teach kids English and in Kawasaki, and it's kind of notable that this year people aren't talking about like Kobayashi so much, or I don't know who else, Oshima or someone. Everyone's talking about Mitoma. So, I mean, he certainly, of course, caught the imaginations of the fans, particularly the young ones. And yeah, it's just an incredible impact. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not 100% sure about sort of transfers and stuff, because he wants to go to Europe. It's his dream. So presumably it will happen at some stage, but I don't know. Is the transfer window closed? Someone said that, but I don't know what window they were talking about. Maybe it was the toilet transfer window or something, like not the main window, just a little window. But I don't know. As long as we can keep him, I'll be delighted. I can't begrudge him wanting to go away. But yeah, his impact has been fantastic. And I think sort of in a way it's put a bit of pressure on Hatate and Miyashiro, who are also the up and coming youngsters. And I think since Hatate scored his first goal, he's improved so much, because now I don't think there's any so much pressure on him to score. Now he knows he can just play and, you know, he'll be appreciated. And probably the same for Miyashiro, but we haven't seen him since he scored against in that Kobe Cup game, so we haven't had the chance to see if the goal has chilled him out. But you could definitely see all the youngsters were kind of, well, I say all the youngsters, so those two youngsters were kind of stressed, but Mitoma just came on and just went for it, so he wasn't bothered at all, really. He hit the ground running, and well, he hasn't stopped yet, but yeah, it's great. I'm delighted at the moment, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, and fair play to you. And yeah, Kaoru Mitoma, absolutely sensational. He could have had a hat-trick as well, but yeah, was inches away in the 71st minute after a slaloming run into the box. So, Sam, we've obviously talked a lot about Mitoma in the past few weeks. But, I mean, at the end of the day, was, you know, we don't want to try and bring Neil down at all here, but was this kind of the worst possible result for a neutral, Sam? Because you obviously want to see a title race. You want to see Yokohama clicking into gear, as I think we're all agreed that if there's going to be a team that could have challenged Kawasaki, at least in, you know, in terms of attractive footballing terms, then Yokohama probably would have been it. But, I mean, now they once again find themselves 17 points behind the leaders. And, you know, I guess for the sake of, as we all know, I've already ruled Yokohama out of the title race. But, I mean, yeah, in terms of a title race at all, F. Marinos winning this would have obviously been the best result for the neutral.
Yeah, it would have kept the door open slightly for them. And as good as Kawasaki are to watch for any neutral, you do want a title race. And at the moment, their nearest challenger is Cerezo Osaka, and they beat them 5-2, so they don't really seem like challengers when you look at it that way. And yeah, they beat Tokyo quite comfortably as well. And Nagoya, since beating Kawasaki, have kind of dropped off form. So at the moment, it's not really looking like there's going to be much of a title race, but this is the J-League. I've not seen a lead so far in Japan that hasn't been thrown away. So I'm sure they don't want to wish this on Neil and Frontale, but I'm sure there'll be a blip coming at some point. But at the moment, they just keep rolling on. They've bounced back well from a couple of dodgy results to turn in like three really, really good performances. The battering of Shimizu, the equal battering of Kobe in the cup, and then in this game, I've not seen many teams as comfortable against Yokohama, especially away from home. And as Neil said, the way that Frontale are able to change up their style of play, I mean, first off, it was quite measured. They didn't really commit too much. Then start of the second half, they were back to the pressing that they did against Kobe and just kind of blew Yokohama away. And then later on, Jessiel went off again. Hopefully it's not an injury, it's just a precautionary. But then they managed to sit back and they managed the game quite well as well. So yeah, I just think it's looking very difficult that anyone can catch Frontale, but we're in the right league if we want to see a title challenge out of nowhere.
Well, that's it. I mean, there is a stat that I pulled out as well. I mean, obviously we haven't played 15 rounds of the J1 season, but Frontale are one of several teams to have played 15 games so far. And since J1 expanded to 18 teams in 2005, Kawasaki's current total of 38 points is the most that any J1 team has taken from their first 15 games of a top flight season. So that obviously sounds extremely impressive, Neil, and you'll be rapt to hear that. But we don't really want to rain on your parade, but they've taken over the mantle of the most points after 15 games from two teams who took 37 from their first 15, and neither of those two teams went on to win the title. Hiroshima, just 2 years ago, obviously roared out of the gates and took 37 points from their first 15 games, and we saw how that happened, and Neil saw it firsthand, obviously, as Frontale ended up beating Hiroshima to the title. And Urawa did the same in 2015 in the first stage of the that J1 season, when Reds, of course, went through the first half of the season unbeaten. Reds took 37 points from their first 15 games, and then, of course, yeah, went on to lose in the playoffs. Neil, you can't do any more than set a new record for the most points after 15 games. So I think we're all in agreement here. You won't obviously be calling anything in your team's favour yet so far, but you guys have just made it's written down in paper. You've made the best start ever to a J1 season.
I didn't know, but yeah, thanks for telling me, and I'm delighted about it. But I mean, yeah, you know me, the glass is always half empty. So. Yeah, I'm still worried about the centre-backs because we've only got two. and one of them's probably a little bit injured. But when we had Kudamaya and Yamamura come in and for one game, and we did pretty well against Shimizu in that game. So, I mean, there's a sort of some light at the end of the centre-back tunnel. But, that's where it will fall to pieces, I think, if it does. I hope it doesn't. I'm touching wood. I don't want to jinx anything, I think we've all said it before that that's the potential problem. But unless Sir Toru Oniki has a complete meltdown, but he seems to have developing into a more I don't know where I'm going with this. I love Oniki is basically what I'm trying to say for the time being.
Fair enough. Don't blame you at all. And yeah, so in the next week, Vissel Kobe, goodness knows what you're going to do to them on Wednesday night when they visit the Todoroki in the next J1 match day. And then on Sunday, Frontale are at home again when you host Hiroshima. And I think the worst thing, not the worst thing, but one thing that could certainly damage any prospective title race is that if Yokohama have a reaction to this loss on Saturday in the next week, well, on Wednesday they travel to Nagoya, and next Sunday they host Cerezo Osaka. Both of those teams are in the top four, and with games in hand are the most likely probably challenges to Frontale. So if Yokohama hit their stride in the next week, Stuart, they might actually be doing Kawasaki a favour in the title race, because they'll be taking points off of Nagoya and Cerezo. But yeah, obviously you're in the midst of a frankly unbelievable run of 19 games in 10 weeks. FC Tokyo have the same schedule, and Ange Postecoglou has been rotating so far throughout the season, so you'll be relatively confident whatever sort of team he puts out there will be able to get a result, and hopefully a reaction to this defeat will be coming on Wednesday night away at Nagoya.
Well, yes, I really hope so. It's a bit like Thunderbirds, you know, when it comes up at the start, you know, anything can happen in the next 90 minutes. So I'm always on edge and looking forward to seeing lots of goals, and hopefully none of them in our net. I did have one couple of comments there. I did notice that Oniki is actually a magnet user. He had his magnet board out and was shuffling it quite intently. So I wonder if that might be the key to success this year. And also I wanted to say that, I really, really was impressed by Mitoma, and hope he does get his chance to go to Europe as soon as possible.
Very good, very good. All right, well, Sam, anything else to add on this or either of these two teams before we let our guests retire for the evening?
I just want to say it was very nice in the last few games to see Manabu Saito back. I know, obviously, history between the two clubs, but he didn't play too often at the start of the season. Obviously, Mitoma and Hasegawa kind of ousted him from that left-wing position. But in the last couple of games, especially against Kobe and to a lesser extent Shimizu, but he looks like a little bit more of the player that he was, because obviously he joined midway through an ACL injury. It's taken him a while to get anywhere near the sort of fitness that he was at Yokohama, because at that stage he was one of the best players in the league. But yeah, he's had a good week. He came on in the second half. He was quite unlucky not to be involved in the fourth goal. He was narrowly offside when he squared the ball. But yeah, I just thought it was great to see him back, and hopefully, I mean, if he gets back to anywhere near his best, I mean, that's just another incredible option that Kawasaki have.
Yeah, I reckon it probably wasn't particularly great for Stuart to see Saito back in and in some sort of form in recent weeks. But we don't want to upset Stuart with too much Manabu Saito talk. So I guess we might leave it there. And Stuart, I'll thank you again for your time on this week's episode, and thanks for also ignoring the time that your watch buzzed in between that downpour to tell you that Noah was building an ark out the back, and this was your last chance to sail away to the promised land. So fantastic to have you joining us again, and good luck to F Marinos in the coming weeks as this procession of games continues.
Yes, looking forward to the endless excitement this season is bringing, and I hope to see you soon or speak with you soon, maybe, to remain distant.
Yes, indeed. And of course, it's 19 games in 10 weeks, but that's only your domestic. And then, of course, our teams go off and play in the ACL, wherever that's going to be held. So, we've a lot more bridges to cross before we get to those to those games. But thanks again, Stuart, and to Neil. Riding high and absolutely fantastic. Can't I don't think we can knock you down off your perch after a performance like Saturday night and the start your team has made. As I've said, it's the best start ever in J1. So long may the good times continue.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, I think if anyone's going to knock me off my perch, it will be myself. So hopefully I'll try not to do that. And like Stuart said, hopefully we can. Stuart, hopefully I can see you at the next game if that happens. If away fans are in, then, because last few years I haven't managed to see you at Marino's away, and it'd be good to catch up in person again.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll definitely make it a date if we're allowed.
All right then. So big thanks to Neil Debnam and Stuart Woodward. After a quick hit of music, Sam and I will wrap up the rest of the J1 Match Day 14 slate. Okay, thanks again to Stuart and Neil. And for our supporters on Patreon, both Kawasaki and Yokohama F. Marinos' games from Wednesday night are choices in our latest poll. We want you, our patrons, to vote on what you think is the game of the round in Wednesday's match day 15. And then Sam will be watching said game and, doing a midweek special episode with John Steele. So we're very much looking forward to that. And, the other games in the poll involve Kashiwa hosting Gamba Osaka and Cerezo Osaka hosting Sapporo. And we will begin part two with Cerezo Osaka, who stayed second in the table after, what appeared to be, Sam, a fairly regulation 3-0 home win over Urawa Reds. On a normal day, it might have been 2-0, and Cerezo still rather comfortable, but only for Shusaku Nishikawa to... Well, I'd like you to actually talk through what you think he was doing in the 93rd minute when he handed a debut goal to Shota Fujio of Cerezo.
Yeah, I don't know if he's just a friend of the family of Fujio, because he did everything he could to hand him a perfect debut. It's just towards the end of the game, he strolled out doing his channeling his inner Hiroki Ikura. He calls for the ball, then just tries to turn in and out. I don't think he really knew what he was doing, and Fujio tackled him and then got his goal. So a great moment for him, but not one that Nishikawa will look on too fondly.
Yes, indeed. Shota Fujio netting from 40 yards in his debut into an empty net. So that's quite a way to announce yourself on the J1 scene for the 19-year-old. Earlier on in the game, after a goalless first half, Tatsuhiro Sakamoto crossed from the right and Ken Tokura leapt like a salmon and headed back across Nishikawa 3 minutes after the break to give the hosts the lead. And then after Leonardo blasted just past the hour mark as a Reds search for an equaliser, Sakamoto was instrumental again in Cerezo doubling their advantage in the 74th minute. At first, he turned Ryosuke Yamanaka inside out by the touchline, leaving the Reds defender in a heap, then dribbled into the box and fired across in off Thomas Deng and through the hands of Nishikawa for an own goal. So that was 2-0, and then Fujio's cameo capped the evening for Cerezo. And we mentioned earlier on at the start of the episode, Deng, now the clubhouse leader for goal of the season, but unfortunately credited with the own goal here, Cerezo's second of the evening. So I don't know, Sam, does that sum it up fairly concisely, a comprehensive and comfortable win for Cerezo overall?
Yeah, it was quite comfortable. I mean, for long periods, nothing happened in this game. Just Reds didn't offer too much. And I mean, they had Leonardo, who is their only real bright spot going forward, and he's carried them for a lot of this season. I know their results have looked quite good on paper, but really, I've not been impressed with them at all in terms of most of their performances. And this one, I thought Cerezo were comfortable. It was good to see Ken Tokura back. He's not played too much this season for Cerezo, but I mean, he showed his qualities. He's a handful for any defender in the air, and his header was fantastic. But once again, I think Sakamoto has just been one of the kind of surprise packages this season, a pleasant surprise. I mean, came from J2, I thought, yeah, he looked a decent player on paper, but didn't look much better than Mizunuma, who they had last season. But he's been fantastic. I mean, involved in most things that they do. He was obviously involved in the two goals here. And yeah, just him and Kiyotaki as well, who's come into his own in the last, this season, really. I mean, he had his injury problems for the last few years, but yeah, he looks a lot better now, up towards his previous best. So yeah, those two are really the main threats for Cerezo, but they just looked really comfortable, and they're worthy of second place in the league, I'd say.
Yes, indeed. And a bit of a segue here, Sam, but you were involved in this Twitter conversation, so I'm not springing anything untoward on you here. There was a question on, I believe it was Sunday night, from a Twitter user, Lafa, L-A-F-A, @_Lafita_, on the tweet machine. He wanted to know, basically, what Japan 11 would be if you could only select players from the J-League. And Sam, you weighed in with an 11 of your own. Tatsuhiro Sakamoto didn't make it. How close was he to making the cut? And would he, I guess, would he get a spot on the bench of your hypothetical J-League / Japan national team as this far into the season?
Oh, absolutely. This was a team I'm basing on just performances this season, so Sakamoto would be right up there. I mean, it's just unfortunate there are quite a few players in that summer position. I thought Ianaga, who I'd put in his position, has just edged him this season, but maybe he benefits from being surrounded by like really good attacking players that maybe make him look a little better. But yeah, definitely Sakamoto would be right up there, in him and kind of Furuhashi and those sorts of players right knocking on the door this season. I thought, yes, Sakamoto has just been a breath of fresh air for Cerezo, gives them a little bit more of an attack, a creative, a bit more creativity going forward. And he's been exactly what they needed. And I've, definitely be in and around my All-Japan or All-J-League Japan squad.
Fair enough. And Sakamoto's Cerezo teammate and indeed captain Hiroshi Kiyotake did make Sam's 11. You can chase up Sam's 11 of the season so far in terms of Japanese players. On his timeline, a very tasty looking side, I must say, as well, Sam. One player with my red and blue glasses on that I think might be knocking on the door of said team after 15 match days is another young / not so young player who has announced himself onto the scene this year, and that's Shuto Abe of FC Tokyo. He followed up his brace in the midweek Levain Cup quarterfinal win over Nagoya with the only goal of FC Tokyo's 1-0 away win over Oita on Saturday night, a game that Tokyo pretty much dominated from start to finish. In terms of the possession stats, it doesn't look necessarily that way. But, Tokyo were very, very comfortable throughout. Here they actually held Oita without a shot for the entire first half, and by the time half time had come around, Abe had already put Tokyo into a 29th minute lead with a deflected strike from just outside the box. Kazushi Mitsuhira did have Oita's first and probably best chance of the whole game 5 minutes into the second half, but he shot straight at Akihiro Hayashi from inside the box. And as part of this testing schedule, Tokyo were able to see this game out fairly comfortably. And I think as I said last week, the number of games that Tokyo and Yokohama, Kobe, Kawasaki, etc. had played in the last few weeks, well, I hadn't actually done the math and realized that, yes, they were embarking on this epic run of 19 games in 10 weeks before their ACL duties come back into the frame of things. But, Sam, for me, I don't think we need to spend a massive amount of time on this game. Oita supporters will be disappointed in their team's performance, and, I feel for them on this occasion. But, Tokyo were ultimately very comfortable throughout here, I felt.
Yeah, I think Oita would have looked at the Tokyo team and thought they've got a chance here. There was a young Shinada playing, Mita was in midfield, there was no Diego Oliveira. So they'd have thought maybe this was their chance, but I think you've got to give Tokyo credit. They were, as you say, quite comfortably in control of the game for large periods. I thought Shuto Abe had another very good game. He's just kind of burst onto the scene. He came in right at the end of last season, didn't he? And just, he's looked the part from day one, and he just keeps getting better and better. And he's going to have to just to fill in that midfield when you've got no Takahashi, and Hashimoto had already left, and everyone's friend Keigo Higashi's still out injured. But he's definitely come to the fore, and he looks the part in midfield, and he'd be another one that would be in and around a all J-League squad for Japan. But I thought comfortable, didn't have to exert themselves too much, and this sort of what you want when you're in this sort of run. You want to win games as comfortably as possible without having to overexert your players, and I think that was pretty much what Tokyo did. I don't think the game was particularly easy on the eye for a neutral, but for Tokyo fans, I'm sure very delighted with the 3 points.
Yeah, most definitely. Obviously, would have liked a second goal to properly kill the game off. But yeah, Oita didn't really offer much of a threat at all. After Mitsuhira's big chance early on in the second half. And then depth-wise for Tokyo, it was good to see Kyosuke Tagawa come back and start this game, actually. So, he's added to Tokyo's depth in their forward positions. And as Sam said, Diego Oliveira was arrested completely from the matchday squad here, so I presume he didn't even make the trip down to Kyushu and rested up for the further games to come in the not so distant future. Sam mentioned a little bit earlier that basically since Nagoya became the first team to beat Kawasaki in the league this season, since then they've had a proper dip in form, and that continued at home on Saturday night when they hosted Kashima, who on the flip side, Antlers are rolling now after their third straight league win, and a terrific 3-1 away triumph for Antlers here in a game that was interrupted for over an hour by a thunderstorm. The game was halted by the referee in just the 12th minute. And if you do your maths and you look at a map of Japan, probably the storm that hit Nagoya in the 12th minute of this game is probably the same storm that drenched Stuart Woodward and all of the other supporters sitting in the lower sections of the Nissan Stadium about, an hour later. Storm probably made pretty rapid progress and, it might have been the same weather front, I would say. The Antlers made the better start after the match resumed. And in the 16th minute, Ryuji Izumi steered in Everaldo's blast across goal. There was an enforced change for Grampus in the 19th minute when Naoki Maeda was forced off through injury and was replaced by Yuki Soma. But then impressive Antlers youngster Ryotaro Araki made it 2-0 to the visitors in the 37th minute. He fired home after he was slipped in by Leo Silva. For Grampus, they pulled the goal back and made a game of it at 4 minutes into the second half. Sho Inagaki volleyed in Sorma's deflected cross, but the Prince Shoma Doi fired under Mitch Langerak to wrap up the points just past the hour, and Leo Silva thought he'd made it 4-1 shortly afterwards, but the linesman raised his flag much to Leo's displeasure, and the replay suggested that the decision might have been erroneous. But two teams going in opposite directions, I'd say here, Sam, as you mentioned yourself. Grampus struggling since hitting the heights of beating Frontale, while the Antlers are proper rolling at the moment.
Yeah, I'm really liking what I've seen from Antlers. They took them a while to get going, but this team, it looks like it's got a bit of confidence back. I think he's figured out more or less his best team, and Everaldo, I think, is just terrific up front. The disguise he has on he goes to shoot against Langerak, it looks like it, but he disguises the pass so well to go across to Izumi, and just, I thought everything that he did in this game was fantastic. And then there were more link-up play with Leo Silva, who, he has been incredible for Kashima and previously Albrecht Niigata in J1, but this season was probably his slowest start to any season, at least that I've seen, but he's come into his own a little bit more. The 1-2 is a little slip ball through to Araki. It was just, he was back to his best, and I thought Kashima were quite free-flowing. Nagoya, they started quite well. It was quite open to start with, but once Kashima took the lead, I just think Nagoya, I don't know if it was a lack of confidence or just tiredness, actually, because they put out a fairly strong side in midweek in the Levan Cup. It didn't get them anywhere as Tokyo brushed them aside quite comfortably 3-0. But, it was just, you could tell that Kashima had had the week break and Nagoya hadn't, and they just didn't really hit their straps often enough. They got back into the game a bit fortunate with the goal for Inagaki, but then they weren't able to kind of continue that pressure, and Kashima kind of weathered the storm, no pun intended, and then just they took the game away from Nagoya late on. And think Langerak is usually very good, but I think he should have done a bit better with Doi's shot that kind of went under him. So it was another bad day at the office for Nagoya, but they'll be hoping to bounce back in midweek. But Yokohama is not necessarily the team you want to face when you're trying to bounce back.
Yeah, I reckon. All right, well, for Kashua Reysol, we were probably under the impression that it was no Ilunga, no party, but, Reysol have proved that theory wrong in the past week, and it's been Hiroto Goya and Ataru Esaka who have been doing just that. Firstly, those two scored all three of Reysol's goals away at Cerezo Osaka in the Levain Cup quarterfinals last Wednesday, with Esaka's brace following Goya's opener. And the impressive Reysol forwards followed the same pattern in this game away at Shimizu on Saturday night. Goya produced a brilliant flicked finish to steer home Hiromu Mitsumaru's cross from the left in the 35th minute, and then Esaka blasted a superb strike into the top corner just 3 minutes later. So, Sam, we're not entirely sure why Michael Ilunga hasn't played the last two games. Obviously, he was due a rest at some point, but most of us probably would have expected him to come back into the team after missing in midweek. But Goya and Esaka have certainly shown that they are not a one-man team.
Yeah, I expected Ilunga to come back, but there was some suggestion that the Kashua were saying, oh, it's only Shimizu, maybe we can do without Ilunga, give him another rest. And it's a little bit harsh on Shimizu, that, but I think Goya proved them right in that he looked, yeah, very lively, both in midweek and this game. I mean, he must have just been glad to see the back of Ilunga for a bit. He was lead. Ilunga obviously beat him to the J2 top scorer last season, and Goya's hardly had a look in this season with the way Ilunga has played. But good for him for kind of taking his opportunity. He looked very good. His goal, I loved his goal here. His little death flick from Mitsumaru's cross, really good technique on that. And then Esaka has had a quietly very good season in behind Ilunga. Obviously, Ilunga has got all the plaudits, but Esaka is the one that gives him the space. He plays the balls through. And then, I mean, he's given the freedom of the park to stroll forward and produce his effort, but it's a very good finish to make it 2-0. And I thought, especially first half, Kashua were very comfortable. Shimizu, yeah, a little all over the place at the back, as usual. But the positive I have with Shimizu is they never let themselves be beaten. They're never out of the game. They always keep going. And second half, they put Kashua under a lot of pressure. And maybe in the end, we're a little bit unlucky not to come away with a draw in this one. They, yeah, created a lot of chances. Dutra hit the crossbar before they scored. There was another few decent saves from Nakamura, who then had to go off injured, which is another worry for Kashua, because their injury list is a mile long at the moment, so they'll be worried as this fixture list continues to pile up. But yeah, I thought Shimizu a much better second half, but Kashua comfortable first half, and in the second half they still had a few chances on the break where they maybe could have gone 3-0 up at the time. So yeah, just thought Kashua did just about enough, and hopefully for them Ilunga was just rested and he can return in midweek, because yeah, as well as Goya played, I don't think he's quite a patch on Ilunga, so they, yeah, could do with him back.
Yes, most definitely. And you've just referenced it there, but yeah, that gasp you heard at about 20 past 6 on Saturday night was Scott McIntyre reacting to Kosuke Nakamura going down with what appeared to be a hip injury as he took a goal kick. So that ultimately led to Nakamura having to be replaced by Haruhiko Takimoto. Sam, what did you make of the incident when Sachiro Toshima had had his goal head scratchingly ruled out for offside? As Reysol would have made it 3-0 to Reysol and probably put the game to bed. I mean, that's come off an S-Pulse defender, and I don't even think Toshima was offside in the first place, was he?
I thought he was just about in an offside position, but I agree it went through from a Shimizu player, so I don't see why it was there. Ruled out. I thought that was quite harsh on him, and I mean that's just the way that it goes. I suppose without the VAR, you're gonna have these sorts of errors. Maybe it was a little difficult for the referee or the linesman to see it, but I thought Kashua were very unlucky not to get a third goal there.
Yeah, fair enough. And you've mentioned the late, you have to call it late drama, because it was still only 2-0 as the game wound down. And obviously with so much stoppage time after Nakamura's had to be replaced. So Dutra hit the bar in the 88th minute, and then Carlinhos headed in a 90th minute free kick. But despite having 8 minutes of added time to find an equaliser, Espols were not quite able to do so. So, Raysol fifth in the table and Espols second from bottom after 14 games. We'll move on, and just behind Raysol in the table are Gunma Osaka after a very fruitful trip up to Sendai for the black and blue half of Osaka, but the game didn't start out particularly well for them as Alexandre Guedes headed in a corner to give Vegalta a fourth-minute lead. And I tell you what, Sam, it could have been nearly 3-3 after about half an hour here. There was loads happening. Yuki Yamamoto marked his first J1 start with a first top-flight goal just 4 minutes after Gumba had gone behind. Yamamoto's crisp strike from 25 yards, making it 1-1. Then Adam Milson headed in after a corner was flicked on in the 15th minute, and Guedes definitely kept Masaaki Higashiguchi busy in the Gumba goal, but was unable to find another way past the Gumba shot stopper in an action-packed first half hour. Vegalta were gifted a chance to equalise from the spot, and oh, Sam, I'll have to get your thoughts on this as well. I mean, surely that wasn't a handball against Adam Milson, was it?
This was confusing because the TV coverage made it look like it was given against Adam Milson. And the ball comes in, and Osei is challenging with the defender, and his arm is raised, but I can't tell if it hits him on the arm or not. And then it just deflects and goes, hits Adam Milson, and there's nothing he can do about it. It hits him, his arm's in towards his body. So if it's given against Adam Milson, that's a horrible decision. If it's given against Onose and the referee has seen it touch his hand, then that's the correct decision. But from the angles that I saw, I couldn't be certain one way or another with that.
Okay, right, yeah, fair enough. Well, yeah, the zone director went straight to Adam Milson and his disbelieving face. So, yeah, I believe that it was given against him. But, yeah, I didn't watch the full game, so I'm not sure if the commentators went into more detail on who the penalty was awarded against. But nevertheless, Higashiguchi continued his, excellent first half by saving Takuma Nishimura's penalty. Although, to be fair to Higashiguchi, it was one of the worst penalties I've ever seen. Shu Kurata lofted a superb finish to give Gumba a two-goal cushion in the 73rd minute. And then Yosuke Idaguchi tapped in a loose ball from inside the six-yard box to wrap up the 3 points for the visitors with 5 minutes left. So an impressive away performance, Sam. I guess a consistent theme throughout this match day, which is impressive, really, when you think about it. From all of the teams that were able to win away from home, considering the way the fixtures are piling up, and to go away on your travels after so many games in quick succession and pull out a performance like this, there's so many impressive examples in this match day. But Gumba, especially, I would say this is a very, very satisfying result for them.
Yeah, Gamba played very well. I'd say second half especially, because as you mentioned, first half, it was kind of like a basketball game. It was end-to-end. It could have been any score. And they got a little bit of a luck with a missed penalty. And Sendai would have thought maybe they were in the game. They could have been level at half-time. But second half, Sendai didn't do too much. Gamba very much in control. I think there's a little bit. And maybe the fourth goal, it might have been a foul by Patrick on Shimao Mate, which, yes, I think the scoreline is a little harsh on Sendai, but take nothing away from the way Gamba played. They brought in Yamamoto in, I think this is his first start. He took his goal very, very well. And then they brought back Kurata in for the injured Yuji Ono, who's got a career littered with injuries. And unfortunately, he's got another one, which might rule him out for the rest of the season. So that's unfortunate. But they show that they've got a good strength and depth in that midfield to bring in a Yamamoto, because Gamba just have this production line where there'll be a youngster for any position if needed. And he looked very comfortable on debut. Maybe not completely in his positioning, maybe, and necessarily his defensive work. But I thought in possession, yeah, he looked very good. And I thought, yeah, it was pretty comfortable in the end for Gamba.
Yes, indeed. So sixth in the table after match day 14 are, as I said, the black and blue half of Osaka, and they've only played 13 games, whereas, FC Tokyo, who sit three spots above them, have played two games more. So, yeah, if Gunma were to win their games in hand, whenever on earth they're going to be scheduled, whenever on earth they're going to be pigeonholed into the schedule, then, we shall see. But Gunma travelling along reasonably well at the moment. The only draw of the match day was played down at the BMW Stadium in Hiratsuka when bottom club Shonan Bellmare hosted Vissel Kobe. And, poor old Kobe, Sam. I mean, they've obviously been battered on Wednesday night. They might have thought they could enjoy a nice trip up to Hiratsuka by the Shonan seaside and pick up a nice 3 points to take back to Hyogo Prefecture. But, unfortunately for them, their hosts... I think, as we've said, I mean, they have been capable of a decent performance here and there throughout the season, Shonan. And as it was, they picked a decent evening to provide another one and took the lead, actually, 5 minutes into the second half when Kazuki Oiwa made a superb run from inside his own half and then headed in Hirokazu Ishihara's cross. Just 3 minutes later, in the 53rd minute, Kobe were level through Gotoku Sakai's superb finish across the keeper. So the spoils were shared in this one, Sam. And here's a stat for you. Kobe became the first team in J1 history to play against three Kanagawa clubs in consecutive match days and draw all three fixtures. I haven't fact checked that, but there's no way that could not be true. So I'm going to go ahead and run with it. If someone wants to prove me wrong there, they're more than welcome to go back and do all of the research. But Kobe 2, Kawasaki 2, Yokohama 3, Kobe 3, and Shonan 1, Kobe 1 are their results in the last three J1 match days. So there you go. It's just carries on another middling season for Kobe, it has to be said.
Yeah, well, first of all, if the adjudication comes back on that, I think you're definitely the clubhouse leader in the fact run this season. That was fantastic. But, yeah, not so from Kobe. I mean, they've got humiliated in midweek, so it was always going to be interesting to see how can you pick yourself up after that. They played almost their strongest side against Kawasaki and just got battered from the first minute. It was just a horrendous performance, so he kind of went just, I'll change a lot of players here. He dropped the goalkeeper, thankfully, dropped various other players. Vermaelen came back into the team, but yeah, they're still, when they have the youngsters on, they look a little bit more energetic going forward. They look like they're going to... just a bit more directness about them, but the quality isn't there. I mean, I don't want to harp on about poor Yutara Oda, because he does get himself into really good positions, but his finishing is atrocious. I think he had a couple of chances in this, didn't hit the target with either of them, didn't ever look like scoring. And, yeah, Kobe took their... right wing back Sakai to produce a very nice finish to get them back into this game, because I thought Shonan held their own very well. They obviously struggling at the bottom of the table, but you can play without pressure this season, as you're not going to get relegated. And I mean, they showed that with Oiwa making that ridiculous dash from his own half forward, and then what a header that is. I mean, he gets himself into all sorts of a strange angle, and to get his neck muscles to power that in past the goalkeeper, yeah, fantastic finish. So yeah, well, credit to Shonan. I thought they battled well, and yeah, they were worthy of the point. Kobe have got to pick themselves up again, because they're back to Kawasaki in midweek. So yeah, good luck, guys.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it should be said, I mean, they did finish arguably the stronger of the two teams here. I mean, Kyogo Furuhashi's goal-bound shot was headed away by the Shonan substitute, Sho Hiramatsu, and Keijiro Ogawa had a shot saved as, they finished the stronger, but yeah, they couldn't find a winner. And that's, ultimately a frustrating trip to Hiratsuka for Vissel to cap, a very disappointing week for them. The early 2 o'clock kickoff on Saturday was up at the Atsubetsu Stadium in Sapporo, where Consadole hosted Hiroshima. And plenty happening here. The 2-0 scoreline doesn't really do this game justice. But yeah, well, all of the incidents. Sapporo have dominated the shot count here, 18-9. But I guess this is just another indication of a team when you're out of form and just out of the habit of winning, Sam. I mean, even scoring a single goal at home, it can be a very, very arduous task. I mean, for Sapporo, it's just another match they'd like to forget and put behind them as quickly as possible, because ultimately Hiroshima have run out 2-0 winners here, and it's just added to Sapporo's woes of recent weeks.
Yeah, they're in a rut, and they're struggling to get out of it. It's not like they're playing badly. I thought, except for the start of both halves, I thought Sapporo were in control for most of it, but the creativity wasn't there, and the finishing edge isn't there. When you lose Suzuki, you'd started the season so well, and the greatest of respect to Anderson Lopez and Jay Bothroyd, I don't think in front of goal they're as clinical as Suzuki had been at the start of this season. They need a few more chances, but the service into them has not been great either. I mean, they're full of running in terms of Suga and Fernandez, but they get to the byline, but not necessarily their cross is not quite there. And then they had no Chanatip in this game either. And he is just so important to the way that they're playing. And it just, everything that they did broke down in the final third. And that was just capitalised on by Sanfrecce, who didn't really create too much outside of the first couple of the spells at the start of each half. But they were clinical with their chances. Yeah, and except for the penalty miss from Heiner, but otherwise it was just one of those where Hiroshima dealt with Sapporo quite comfortably, and yeah, on the counter attack they had enough about them to take the game. And yeah, it's difficult really to see what Petrovic can do or is willing to do to try and break this, because he's so rigid in the way he wants to play, and it's great to watch when it's at full flow, but at the moment it's not. And there aren't many options that he can turn to change this. So they didn't make anything in the transfer window. You'd have thought maybe they'd have signed some sort of replacement for Suzuki, but they didn't. So at the moment, it's difficult to see where the goals are going to come from for Sapporo.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, Sam's referenced the missed penalty there by Reina. It came after Kim Min-tae fouled Douglas Vieira in the 17th. minute, but yes, Reina blasted his spot kick against the post. But yeah, 5 minutes after the restart into the second half, Douglas Vieira headed in Yoshifumi Kashiwa's cross to give Sanfrecce the lead, and then right at the death, Yuya Asano finished off a Hiroshima counter attack with a fine finish at Takanori Sugano's near post. So yeah, 2-0 it finished to the visitors, Hiroshima. And for our final game of a match day 14, Tosu. Remember them, listeners? Yes, they were last in action in match day 9 when they lost 2-0 away at Kashima. And since then, for basically the last month, they've been either suffering through or dodging COVID-19. But after almost a month away, they made up for lost time with a 3-0 home win over Yokohama FC. We've given praise to Yokohama FC in the way that they've gone about things in the past few weeks, Sam, and they did play their part in this game, no question. But, yeah, Tosu, with all that pent-up frustration of not being able to play for a month, they certainly made a very, very bright start here. And dare we say it, we're actually a pretty good value for the 3 points here.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd say this all season, to be honest, but Sagan Tosu were fantastic. I mean, considering the month that they have had, whatever you want to say about how they got into the situation, they've had to deal with 4 months, well, not 4 months, 4 weeks of not playing. They've had various, I think it was 9 players that had the coronavirus, so they were in quarantine after being released from hospital. So they only returned to training the day before the game. The manager was part of that, so he hasn't necessarily been coaching them. It's such a difficult situation for them to be in, but for them to have come out and put in a performance like this against a Yokohama team that have been quite confident in the way that they've been playing, and they've looked good value for their position in the league so far this season. But Tosu were very, very good. They came out of the blocks firing. I thought they looked like they were proving a point, and they just were up for it from the first minute. You didn't know how they would start this game. You didn't know if they would be kind of a bit rusty, given they haven't played for a while and the other teams are in full flow, but they didn't look like that at all. It looked like they were right up for it, completely ready for this game. They made Yokohama look a little bit tired, especially defensively. I know Yokohama were missing Yongapin and Inoue, and I think that does make a big difference to the way they can defend. The youngsters are not bad, but they're not quite to the level of those two. But Tosu, yeah, took them apart, especially second half on the counter-attack. But the cross-in for Kanemori from Morishita is fantastic. Puts it on a plate for him, and Kanemori scores to give them the perfect start, and they took confidence from that. And, yeah, very good value for the 3-0 victory.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. And how about the engine on Tomoya Koyamatsu, Sam? I mean, he was setting up chances in the first 5 minutes of the game for Sagan, and then ran 80 yards from just outside his own box and raced clear to finish from the edge of the Yokohama FC box in the 86th minute. I mean, absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, magnificent. As you say, I'd have fallen over and collapsed halfway along that. But yeah, for him to sprint at that, to get away from all the defenders, and then to get into just in front of the goalkeeper and to have that composure as well. Yeah, terrific goal from him. And he was fantastic throughout this game. And it was, yeah, him and Sakamoto, I think, were both at Kyoto last season. He's looked, even in the games previously where Tosu weren't necessarily as exciting, but you'd say Koyamatsu was probably their best creative influence, and he was again here. And then if he can add 80-yard long bursting runs to his game, I think they've got a very good player there. And yeah, just I was very impressed with Tosu. I know we've all ragged on Tosu all season and before the season. There was that question, are they going to be the worst team that has ever played in J1? And I think that they're answering their critics here. That was a really good performance.
Yeah, most definitely. And for me personally, I'm glad the fact that FC Tokyo are now not the only team that Tosu have beaten in J1 this season. And again, they've put in an excellent performance and fully deserved this victory. I mean, for Yokohama FC, it's one of those where, they might have got something from this game, especially after Tosu had dominated the chances in the first half hour. Kensuke Sato, Koki Saito, and our man Yusuke Matsuo all had decent chances before half-time, but then, with 10 minutes left and the score still at 1-0 and, the game in the balance, the Tosu substitute, Daichi Hayashi blasted home, and then, Koyamatsu's run in the 86th minute is, it's chariots of fire stuff. It's absolutely inspirational, and put the appropriate finishing touches on a famous win, I would say, in Sagan Tosu folklore, Sam. This will probably go down after such a long absence. The team struggling, and as you said, not too many people rating them, and rightly so, a lot of people would say. But terrific performance from Tosu, and they are now right back in the swing of things after a second victory of the season. All right, before we move on to the games in Wednesday's match day 15, we'll just wrap up all of the results from last Wednesday's Levain Cup quarterfinals. I think we've mentioned all but one of them in passing so far. So from the left-hand side of the draw, we've mentioned that Cerezo Osaka hosted Kashiwa, but lost 3-0 with Goya and Esaka accounting for all three of Reysol's goals. In the semi-finals, Kashiwa will face Yokohama F. Marinos after they also won away from home 5-4 on penalties against Sapporo after a one-all draw after 90 minutes. The unfortunate Akito Fukumori missed Sapporo's fifth penalty, and that was that. So the semi-final will be played at Mitsuzawa in suburban Yokohama on October the 7th. And on the other side of the draw, we've mentioned it, Kawasaki 6. Nil away winners over Kobe, just a 90-minute dismantling of their hosts Vissel by Frontale. Yu Kobayashi got Frontale rolling with an early brace Manabu Saito, Akihiro Ienaga, Yasuto Wakizaka, and Taisei Miyashiro added more gloss, and FC Tokyo defeated Nagoya 3-0 at home, the only home team to win in the quarterfinals. Shuto Abe's brace and Adailton's finishing touch, setting up a semi-final between Kawasaki and FC Tokyo at Todoroki on the 7th of October. And I love the Levain Cup. All right, Sam, coming up then on Wednesday, do we want to give a nudge to the patrons on which game in particular you would like to watch?
I can try. I don't know if they'll listen to me or not. They might go completely against me. But, yeah, I think the game on paper that I'm most looking forward to would be Kashua versus Gamba. Both of those sides just outside the ACL places, both very evenly matched. I think a longer back, I think, yeah, they had a very good game in the Levain Cup. It was the Kim Seung-yu show where he made plenty of saves from Gamba to keep them at bay, got himself into a J-League team of the century from Alan Gibson. Yeah. Hopefully he might be back, I suppose, if Nakamura is missing and if Kim can prove his fitness. So I think that game on paper would be a very good game. But then, I mean, can Kawasaki fans really not go for another battering of Kobe? And then there are other good games. I don't think Cerezo versus Sapporo will get quite the love that maybe it needs. But yeah, there are four good games on there, so I won't be too disappointed whichever way it goes.
Indeed, indeed. And yet, Nagoya versus Yokohama F. Marinos is the fourth choice there for our patrons to choose from. Other games on a match day that kicks off at 6:30 with the Kawasaki hosting Kobe. There are five games at 7 o'clock. Kashima hosts Sendai. Reysol hosts Gamba, as we've mentioned. FC Tokyo hosts Yokohama FC. Hiroshima hosts Shimizu. And Oita entertains Shonan. Then three games at 7:30. Urawa Reds host Tosu, and the two other games in our Patreon poll, Nagoya versus Yokohama F. Marinos at the Mizuho Stadium, and Cerezo Osaka hosts Sapporo at the Yanma. And then, of course, right back into the swing of things on the weekend with the match day 16, Sam, two games on Saturday, Shimizu host Kashima and Kobe entertain FC Tokyo, and then the other seven games will all take place on Sunday. And just having a quick glance at it, Leaders Frontale host Hiroshima, as we mentioned at the end of part one with Neil. Yokohama F. Marinos host Cerezo Osaka, and again might be doing their prefectural rivals a favor if they can defeat Cerezo, obviously second in the table as things stand at the moment. All right, any other business, Sam, or you think we can leave it there? It was obviously great to dedicate so much time to the Yokohama F. Marinos versus Kawasaki game, as it was such a huge one and lived up to its billing.
Yeah, I think it gave us a very good game for the neutral. I thought both teams looked to attack, and it was worthy of being the highlight of the round, and hopefully there's more to come in midweek. If I get a 0-0 draw after you got a 5-2 victory, I'll be devastated.
Indeed. Well, it is a funny old game, isn't it, Sam? So we shall see. But, looking forward to the game that our patrons choose, and indeed what yourself and John can come up with on Wednesday night. And yes, while we've been speaking throughout this episode, the J2 poll is also posted that our patrons will have already discovered by the time they listen to this episode. So plenty more coming up from J-Talk Towers in midweek, and obviously we'll be back at normal service resuming with our regular podcast early next week after match day 16 is played. So that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Neil Debnam and Stuart Woodward for their time, and obviously we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. Thanks, as always, to our patrons for their ongoing support. We'll be back next week to wrap up the week's J1 action. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.